Hello, everyone. Welcome to Make a Difference Radio. Our show will air every week on Wednesday at 10 a.m. Each week, we will spotlight a different nonprofit organization and the people and businesses that support them. We are trying to create an awareness for their causes and assist them in spreading their message, as well as show the community ways that they can get involved with helping. We are also placing a strong emphasis on corporate responsibility, because given the continued state of our economy, it is now more important than ever that businesses do their part to help these great organizations. This show is brought to you today by Swipe for Change, whose mission is to create consistent and recurring donation streams for nonprofit organizations by leveraging business merchant accounts at no additional cost to the business. Please visit swipeforchange.com or call 1-800-219-5727 for more information.
Hello, everyone. Derek Van Dam here again for another great episode of Make a Difference Radio. We've got a wonderful show for you today. Our title of the show is The Georgia Meth Project, Fighting the Epidemic. And to give you some background, the Georgia Meth Project aims to combat methamphetamine use primarily by the teen and young adult population through a large-scale research-based and very hard-hitting public service messaging program that they have. It's been founded in 2005 through a philanthropic effort of the Thomas and Stacy Siebel Foundation. And the Meth Project has been named one of the most effective philanthropic initiatives in the world by Barron's, a small publication, as many of you know. We welcome Georgia Meth Project's Executive Director, Jim Langford, and Project Manager, Latrina Patrick, onto the program today to speak about the role of the organization in combating the epidemic of meth abuse in Georgia. So welcome today.
Thanks, Derek.
Thank you.
Good. Well, why don't we start with you? Maybe you could give us a little bit of background about the Meth Project, the origins of the organization, and then we'll start talking about some of the day-to-day.
Sure. Well, the Meth Project got started mostly in some western states. The Siebel Foundation is located in Palo Alto. Tom Siebel made a lot of money once upon a time in the technology world, created a ranch out in Montana. And he soon found that Montana had a very serious methamphetamine problem, the fifth worst in the country. And he set about figuring out a way to combat that problem. Tom was a marketing professional for many years and said, you know, I think that I can find a way to unsell the meth lifestyle. If I'm good at selling things, I'm probably good at unselling things. And so he put about $30 million of his own money into the effort of creating a model, creating the right advertising or media campaign. He hired addiction professionals, Hollywood producers and directors, all of those people to come together to make this an effective campaign, and then put together the right team of folks to make it happen in Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, those first states, and found out that, oh my gosh, this program really is effective. They were able to reduce methamphetamine use in those states by 65% and 70%.
Wow!
Just in the first couple of years. So that's the campaign that we then brought to Georgia about 3 years ago, and we're the first state east of the Rockies to really implement this kind of campaign.
Oh, great! So 2005 is when it started out in Montana, and then it was what, 2009 or
2008, 2009.
Eight, right.
We launched our first ads in 2010, but we had to spend our first year really raising money. I mean, this
right.
is the Siebel Foundation paid for all of that initial work of creating the ads, but then we had to raise all the money here to put those ads on the air.
That makes sense. So, talk to me about some of the programs that you currently are using. What is the day-to-day that the Georgia Meth Project enlists? Because I know that we have a big meth problem here in Georgia.
Yes. We have the third worst meth problem in the country. So it's a very serious meth problem here in Georgia. And Georgia is a very different state than those western states. We're much bigger. We're more diverse racially, geographically, rural-urban, much bigger population, all those things. And so it's a more complex issue here in Georgia. The campaign in Georgia, as it is in these other states, consists of several things. One is the media piece. Now, it's a real education campaign. Some people try to say, oh, it's a scare campaign. No, it's not. It's intended to be a very specific, very rich educational campaign. And yes, some aspects of that are scary, but so is the meth problem. Meth in its everyday use and the lifestyles of these folks who are using meth is scary stuff. And we're hearing some horrifying stories every day. But it's much more than that in terms of the campaign. Yes, it's media. It's education-oriented. It's also community outreach, and that's why Latrina is part of our team. She manages all of that work that goes on out there in communities, recruiting volunteers, getting those volunteers to show up at different events, organizing those folks, school programs. We taught about 25,000 kids this past year in school programs. So Latrina's been a big part of that, part of the campaign as well.
Great. Latrina, tell us a little bit about what you're doing in your community outreach.
Well, actually, I always say that it's the best part of the job. It's the most fun part of the job because that's where we get to see our direct impact. And so we have a couple of community outreach specialists that we hire to spend the majority of their time in the schools. And so what they do is they go into the health classes, which is where kids are introduced to substance abuse prevention. And so that's a perfect entry point for us to get our message into the school. And we have a 45-minute to an hour presentation that we do with the kids where we show them the commercials. We do a PowerPoint presentation where we teach them the specifics about meth. So they learn about what meth looks like. They learn about the physical and behavioral symptoms of meth. We basically teach them why meth is so addictive. We really teach them at a high level and they really understand the information. So we get to see the impact that we're having on the kids because it really registers with them. So that's the main part of what we're doing on a day-to-day basis. And as Jim said, we also utilize our volunteers to help us with other efforts outside in the community.
So when you're going into a school, is it you personally that goes in and does these presentations, or is it the volunteers that tend to do more?
Sometimes I go into the school, but we have paid staff who we refer to as our community outreach specialists. We've just started training volunteers to help us with that because we are a statewide program and we just can't be everywhere. We just don't have the staff to be in all the schools in 159 counties in Georgia.
Right.
So we've decided to start asking a little more of our volunteers and those that have that experience and that can do public presentations and community presentations. We've started calling on them to do that.
That's great. Since you've been in Atlanta since 08 and 09, have you been focusing more on the urban areas or more on the rural areas?
I can't really say we've focused more. Well, we've done a lot of stuff in near the metro area. So most of the counties we've penetrated have been in northeast Georgia, southern around the southern part of the state, and like I said, right around the metro area. So I can't really say more rural because we've been in Hall County, Forsyth County,
right.
Fulton County, Henry County, Clayton County, DeKalb County. So, you know, we're trying to be as far reaching as we possibly can because it's an issue that's affecting everybody. So we try to make sure that we're just not focusing on one part of the state. We're trying to expand as much as we can.
Well, and the meth problem, I want to jump in for a second. You know, the meth problem in Georgia, sometimes it's perceived as just being a rural problem.
Right.
And it certainly got started that way as a rural problem. But very quickly, it's moving into these suburban counties, like Latrina mentioned, you know, Forsyth, Cobb, you know, Gwinnett, these kinds of counties as well.
Is that because the production method has changed? Because, I mean, you know, it was always stereotypical that it was, you know, being done in some, you know, mobile home somewhere. But that's changed now, hasn't it?
Yes, everything has changed. You know, cocaine got started in the 1970s and 80s as a rich man's drug in urban environments.
Right.
And we always knew about Miami Vice and all those things. Well, cocaine quickly went out into more rural areas, and then it went also down demographically. So it wasn't a rich man's drug anymore. It became an everyday drug for a lot of folks from a lot of different demographic backgrounds. Well, when it got out to some of these rural areas, you know, 20 years ago or more, some of these folks out there said, well, gee, I'm not going to pay that guy from Atlanta a lot of money for this drug. I've got this formula, and the formula's been around for a long time, 50 years or more. You know, I figured out this little formula that somebody gave me. I'm going to go down to the drugstore and I'm going to buy a bunch of Sudafed and some other things, and I can make up something more powerful than cocaine, and cheaper, and I can mix that up, and then you know I can sell some to my buddies, and I can have a high that lasts 6 to 12 hours. Instead of the 45-minute high from cocaine. So that's how the meth problem got started in rural areas. Some of it was what I would call sort of old moonshine culture.
Right.
Well, that quickly has changed, and so in a couple of ways. One, it's come back into these more urban environments and suburban environments. But number two, the Mexican cartels have really taken over the business. You know, 80% of the drug meth that now comes into Georgia is coming from Mexico. It's not being made locally.
Wow.
So a huge influx. Atlanta has now become the East Coast distribution hub for methamphetamine.
Why do you think that is?
Well, part of it's transportation. I mean, you know, the highways are all coming together here. Atlanta's a big hub for every other kind of commodity. Why not drugs, too? You know, cocaine, Miami was the center for, or East Coast distribution hub for, you know, for cocaine in the 1970s because the drug was coming from South America, and Miami was sort of the, you know, the entry point.
Right.
Well, Atlanta's now the entry point for all these trucks coming from Mexico, coming from the West.
You know, you mentioned that Georgia was the third worst state in the country. Can you kind of explain a little bit the scope of the problem? What are we really talking about here?
Sure. Well, we're talking about, and our target audience of kids is ages 12 to 17 years old.
Okay.
And you say, gosh, 12-year-olds? Yes. You know, we've even had some of our radio ads that have played, who real teens telling their real experiences about the drug. They'll say they started as early as 9, 10, 11 years old, which is just horrifying.
Unbelievable.
But the drug is easy to get for those kids. Maybe it's an older brother or sister who provided it to them. And kids will tell us in the schools, and Latrina will confirm this, that they'll say, oh, yeah, you know, they'll, the 20, 30% of them will say, oh, sure, I know exactly where to get that drug. I can get it, you know, easily.
Wow.
And so it is easy for them to get. So, yes, this target audience of 12 to 17-year-olds is who we're really going after.
I've got to imagine that this is a fairly expensive problem on the state of Georgia.
It is a $1.3 billion a year problem for Georgia.
Wow.
And that's everything from foster care, court systems, crime, you know, you name it. But it affects everybody in Georgia in one way or another. And okay. Some of these are pretty severe. I just mentioned the foster care issue. In some counties, it's as high as 60-70% of the kids that are in foster care in those counties are there because one or more of the parents are on methamphetamine or have abused the kids because of meth or some sort of problem with meth. In Bartow County, that figure is 92%. 92% of the kids in foster care in Bartow County are there because of methamphetamine. And that figure comes from one of the organizations there focused on helping kids.
That's unbelievable. What are some of the long-term effects that that people that use methamphetamines find? What are some of the repercussions that
I'll let Latrina talk about that. She talks about it with schools every day with the kids.
Yeah, it's really amazing that some of the effects that people we hear recovering addicts tell us now that, you know, one long-term heart condition, heart problems. I met a person in recovery who said that because of the damage that meth did to their heart, that they have to take nitroglycerine, you know, those pills that the people have to put under their tongues
right.
to keep them from having a heart attack, has to take those every single day. Stroke, that's a common thing for people who are on meth, death, hallucinations, convulsions. I mean, those are the types of things that happen, but some of the long-term stuff are the things that they just don't get back, like the memory. The meth really messes up their brain so that they can't remember things and have problems with that. So it's one of those drugs that even those people who are fortunate enough to get off, they still have to deal with the repercussions. I even met, you know, we've all seen the pictures of people who have this bad teeth, the tooth decay that comes,
right.
goes along with it. Well, I met someone who was in recovery. She'd been off the drug for at least 2 years, and her teeth had just started to fall out. So she'd been, you know, trying to change her life, and then she just started having the repercussions of that. So it's just ongoing. So it's just, we tell kids, this is not something that you want to start because, you know, you just never know how it's going to end up for you.
Health professionals call it a toxic cocktail. I mean, in terms of how it affects the body. It'll affect every organ of the body.
Really?
Including the skin, the teeth, the brain, liver, kidneys, I mean, you name it. Partly because of the trace elements that are in the drug in terms of the manufacture. But a good part of it is just it's such an intense drug. And what it does to the body just wrecks every organ.
Yeah, you tend to see from any commercials of yours that I've seen, or from any shows that depict, a lot of times that you see a lot of meth addicts scratching themselves, a lot of scabs mm-hmm. on the skin. What causes that?
Well, because meth has an effect on the central nervous system, and so what happens is they have these sensations that feels like that they literally feel like bugs are crawling under their skin, so they're picking. And that's what we show kids the pictures of, like what we refer to as meth mites, because they're constantly digging in their skin. And it's very common for someone that's strung out on meth to spend hours at a time picking at their skin and pulling their eyelashes out and things like that. It's just really mainly because of the effect that meth has on their central nervous system, so their nerves are all messed up.
And it also affects the capillaries in the skin so that it dries up those, it restricts those capillaries, so that makes you also feel like an itchy sensation in the skin, too.
I see. That's probably what triggers it, and then from there they probably it compounds the problem by
right.
by them itching as much as they do.
That's right.
Wow, that's great. That's a lot of downsides, it sounds like. It's it's amazing that somebody would take something so bad for them. I mean, just the thought of somebody at 8 or 9 years old is horrifying, that somebody would even start at that young of an age. You know, it's, you know, where are the parents in these situations?
Well, and the drug is easy to get into the body. Some people say, well, gee, what, you know, do you snort this stuff? How do you get into the body? Every way you can imagine. I mean, you know, it starts as a crystalline substance that then they can crush up and snort like cocaine, they'll smoke it like crack cocaine, or they'll finally start injecting it into the arm. They're trying to get back to that first big high that they first had. Very difficult. Can't get back to that first high, but they'll keep trying and trying in a more intensive way. The other thing they can do is put it in soft drinks. You know, they can put it in a soft drink, put it in candy, put it in chewing gum, you know, these kinds of things. And so it's very easy to get into the body. And because of that ease of entry, you'll see a lot of females on the drug. This is very different from cocaine and marijuana. About 50, 51, 52% of the users of meth are female. And you'll even see older sisters bringing younger sisters onto the drug. And part of it is this ease of entry.
Right.
Oh, here's a little something in your – I put a little something in your soft drink. It'll give you a little lift. Don't worry. It's just that meth stuff. It gives you a great little kick.
Wow.
So that's another terrible thing about it.
Now, you'd mentioned that, that there are people that can construct these things with just over-the-counter products that they could buy at the local convenience store. Have there been some restrictions that have been put in place in recent years on that?
They have, and different states have attacked that in different ways. Georgia required that these substances or Sudafeds be put behind the counter so that a drug store owner has to get them for whoever's buying them. Well, that might have been effective for a year or two. It restricted some of the bigger purchases of Sudafed, but very quickly, all that did was just open the market up for these Mexican entrepreneurs who said, well, we'll just run these middle guys out of the business. Mm-hmm. Now, for small guys, they can still go and get enough, what they call smurfing, go around and get it, buy enough small quantities of Sudafed to mix up a small batch. Mm-hmm. You hear about rolling meth labs. Well, that's just a 2-liter bottle. A soft drink bottle in the back seat of a car, where they've gotten enough Sudafed together and enough of these other ingredients, and put them together in this thing in the back seat of the car, and 2 hours later they've got a usable drug. But that is a smaller percentage of usage and manufacture than ever before.
Now, I see. So these cartels that are distributing this, in what form do they tend to distribute it the most? Do they try to put it in products already, or is it sold
it's crystal format and in huge quantities. There was a big bust about a year ago out in Gwinnett County you might have heard about. It was in big barrels. And now it was
984 tons.
984
pounds. Sorry,
yeah,
pounds.
Yeah, almost half a ton of cocaine in an almost finished format, meaning it was brought in barrels almost finished, and they were doing some of the last processing of the drug when the house caught fire and killed these three children that were in the house in Gwinnett County. And so that's what you're seeing, cartels either mixing it up in Mexico, bringing it in a finished form, mm-hmm. or an almost finished form, and then finishing it somewhere here locally. So both ways.
When it is finished here, or the whole process is done here, I've heard that when police do find these situations, that the entire house really has to almost have a hazmat team
come in.
And
they do have to.
Because I guess it's that flammable? Is that the
reason? Well, it's the toxicity of the other chemicals in the drug. I mean, this is a drug made with all kinds of horrible things and lots of side effects. And so the meth gets loose in a gaseous format in the house, permeates the walls, fabrics, anything that's in the house. And so we've seen costs ranging from $40,000 up to $100,000 per home in order to remediate these negative effects. Also,
wow.
If they've taken the residue and poured it down the well outside or dumped it outside somewhere, then it's contaminating groundwater as well. So very toxic substances, and even police, there have even been some police hurt or even killed by some of the residual chemicals left over after the manufacturing. That can even go on in hotel rooms or extended stay rooms in apartments where people are mixing this up.
Oh, my God. So now you've got some campaigns that are targeted specifically toward this. Can you maybe mention some of the specific campaigns that you run?
Well, the ads started, and again, started in Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, and that kind of thing. And we ran in 2010, we ran about 24,000 radio ads and 21,000 television ads spots. And we had 258 billboards, you know, all around the state. It's a very intensive campaign. The ads, again, heavily, carefully researched in terms of how the drug is used, how it's depicted, all those things. So some teenager, I mean, teens today, you know, are very aware of lots of things. And they know that you're, you know, trying to throw some bull at them about something or trying to gloss over something. They want the reality.
Right.
They want you to show them that reality. And Trina can talk about this in terms of how it works in the classroom. They don't want you to sugarcoat anything. They want you to show it to them. And then they're gonna take and make up their own minds about that reality. And, you know, are you just some adult who's come in the room to, you know, to tell them drugs are bad? You know, they're not going to respond very well to that. They're not going to respond well to a police officer, you know, standing up in front of a or any other authority figure. They're going to respond better to their peers,
right?
And ads that show them the reality of the drug. So yes, started with radio, TV, billboards, and then quickly we went out to schools to do these more intensive one-on-one discussions with those teens.
Great.
And what Jim is saying really is key because, you know, the first thing we ask before we show any commercials is in the classroom is how many of you guys have seen our ads? And all the hands go up, and then I ask them, what's your reaction? What do you think of the commercials? And they always say they're scary. And then I elaborate and find out why they think they're scary. And it's because they say that the commercials really depict the realities as much as possible of what this drug does, and it scares them. And so, I mean, I totally relate to what Jim is saying, that they can identify that this is real, that this is not about, you know, trying to, you know, scare me to death just for the sake of being scared and just to say no, but, you know, just because of the fact that it's the reality of what this drug does. So,
we encourage you to, you know, folks to go on the website, mm-hmm. and look at these ads, you know, if they haven't seen them already. And they can go on there and see what these ads are all about. The first couple of years of the ads, and the way we originally designed this program, the way it was designed for Out West, the first couple of years of ads were supposed to focus on the effect of meth on the individual.
Right.
You know, show a young woman what her face is going to look like on meth. You know, young women really care about their looks and their faces, and they sit in front of the mirror and they pick their eyebrows and eyelashes. I've got three daughters. I know about these things.
I'm sure you do.
And so I've been through that all that teenage phase. But, you know, but show them then what their face is going to look like on meth. It's going to be destroyed. And that is a reality. That's not a scare tactic. That's a reality. Mm-hmm. Show them that. Talk to them about, or let people tell the stories in their radio ads about their teeth crumbling and falling out. That's a reality. And these teens on our radio ads are real teens telling their real stories about their teeth crumbling, you know, about the things that they did to a brother or a sister while they were on meth. And kids respond to that. They listen to those ads very carefully. Mm. So the next wave of ads that then were coming in the later years, and again, you can see these online, the effect of meth on those around you, on parents, on home life, on a boyfriend or girlfriend, you know, the things that meth caused you to do, things that you might do on meth, you know, and part of those ads say, this isn't normal, but on meth it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a young woman telling a group of guys, hey, you can do anything you want to for $50. You know, and these guys, are you kidding me? You know, yeah. And well, what about your sister over there? Oh, yeah, sure, her too. I mean, horrible things.
Right.
You know, that are, but that's a reality of a meth lifestyle. These things happen every day.
Yeah, do anything to get the drug.
Yeah, and these aren't made up stories. I mean, these are stories that come out of real stories that people have told us.
And that's why we tell, the name of our campaign is Not Even Once, because what we really stress to kids is that you don't know that this won't be your reality after the first use. Not everybody is addicted to meth the first time they use it, but the majority of people are. And so when they see the reality of what can happen to you after just your first hit of this drug, that really, really shakes them up a little bit and makes them really reconsider whether or not they even want to risk this, you know, magnificent high that they hear about for all of these other repercussions that are likely to follow.
Right. What are some of the biggest challenges that the Georgia Meth Project faces in terms of what you're up against?
Well, part of it's money. I mean, we have to go out and raise money every day. Mm-hmm. You know, I came from a fundraising effort this morning to this radio show. You know, mm-hmm. we're doing that from foundations, big foundations in Georgia that have been very helpful to us, individuals, some corporations. But that is a never-ending effort. Now, we get a lot of bang for the buck in terms of what we do. Only about 5% of the money that we raise is spent on overhead. You know, I mean, our operations, our salaries, you know, those kinds of things.
That's efficient.
Yep. 95% of it goes directly into the ads and the use of those ads. We didn't have to pay for the production of those ads. Those ads are very expensive to produce.
Right. You know,
$600,000-$700,000 per TV ad to produce. We didn't have to pay for that. That was paid for by the Siebel Foundation, by Tom Siebel. So we're able to use that. So that's a very efficient. So the foundations like that about us in Georgia. But that's one of our biggest challenges, continuing to raise money. Second challenge is getting enough reach out there, getting into these schools, getting the volunteers to help us. So we encourage people to, again, go on the website, sign up to be volunteers, and help us get into those schools.
So when you mentioned that 95% of it goes back into the program with very little going to overhead, is that one of the primary reasons why Barron's gave you that high of a ranking in terms of efficiency?
Probably. And now Barron's, you know, when they look at this rating of the meth project nationally, you know, they're looking at, yes, effectiveness of a campaign. You know, looking at a problem. Now, it's not because of scope. Siebel Foundation's small compared to, say, the Melinda and Bill Gates Foundation, which is much larger and
right.
focuses on a lot of world problems. But the Siebel Foundation does a great job of saying, here's a problem and here's a solution. Here's a problem, here's what we're going to do, and here's how we're going to measure our effectiveness. And so they've been very well. In my prior life, I ran technology companies for about 20 years.
Right.
So I knew who Tom Siebel was. And I know about, you know, what it takes to make a successful entrepreneurial company, you know, go and do well. Tom Siebel was one of those guys who came out of that background too. And so I was very attracted to the campaign early on because I said, oh my gosh, if Tom Siebel is going to take the tools and the staff and all the things that he learned in making a successful technology company and take those things into a nonprofit environment, good gosh, I want to sign up for that, because I've been done a lot of work at nonprofits over the years. And nonprofits mean well; they're not always run well, and so, but I knew this one was going to be run well,
right?
And I knew that, and so yes, you know, that's why Barron's, you know, has rated the Meth Project so highly.
Yeah, we had somebody on a past show that mentioned something along the lines of 501c3 is only a tax designation; not a type of
that's right.
company.
That's right.
It's everything else should be run from a pretty business standpoint. Sounds like that's you guys right. are lean and mean, which is fantastic.
Well, we do. We hire professionals, and you know, like Latrina and the other folks that you know that work out there in the communities. We try to screen our volunteers so that we've got really good volunteers that are going into schools, not just anybody who, you know, who means well. We want to take every volunteer and put them to work in some way, but not every volunteer is suited for every single type of job. You have to find the right things that suit what volunteers want to do, what they're good at, you know, find their skill set, and then put them to work.
Other than maybe the outreach in the classrooms, what are some of the other things that the volunteers help with?
Well, that's one of the things that we've been trying to build, because what we're really trying to get is to get more advocates on the ground. And so we're really trying to empower our volunteers to take a role out front. And so what we've asked them to do is to kind of look out in their own individual communities to see ways that we can fit in. And so sometimes that may entail being a part of a back-to-school fair, a health fair, where we have access to our target population, or helping us to set up at a football game or a high school football game or something like that. But what we try to do is to, because, you know, Georgia is huge and we can't be everywhere. We don't know all the ins and outs of each community. And so what we try to do is to rely on our volunteers to help us to identify opportunities for us to engage, and not only for us to engage, but for them to take the lead on those activities. So we try to be open, and I basically just tell them, you know, the main thing you need to be mindful of is, number one, is whatever you're proposing, does it give us access to our target population, you know, our primary target population, which is young people 12 to 17? You know, are we going to be able to tap into that population? Is the environment going to be conducive for us to get the messaging out, for us to set up a display booth, for us to give out our, you know, bracelets to young people? Because sometimes it may be a huge event that is, you know, luring thousands and thousands of people, but it may not be appropriate or conducive for us. So we're really just trying to engage them on that level to help us to identify opportunities for us to get engaged and for them to get involved. So we're kind of throwing it back on them a little bit in some cases. But other volunteers need you to say, this is what I need you to do. And then they can respond to that. So we're, it's kind of like, you know, we're just trying it out because, again, our state is so big and this project is so amazing and people want to get involved. And we're just trying to find the best ways to allow them to do that.
Do you find that a number of former addicts are volunteering?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're the main ones who will reach out first and foremost because they know what it's about. And so many tell us, man, I wish you guys were around when I got introduced to meth. I never would have went down this road. And so they feel, most feel so grateful to be off the drug because that's not the reality for most people. Most people end up in jail or dead or, you know, continuing to have high rates of recidivism where they go back to the drug constantly. And so they're so grateful that they just want to contribute and give back. And so we try to encourage that quite a bit.
The success rate to for getting people off the drug is very low. I mean, we're talking about 5 or 6%
mm-hmm. Wow.
that are able to ever get off of it and stay off. And so this 5 or 6%, though, feel so grateful. They come to work for us.
You know, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to imagine that a person sharing their actual experience of what happened to them has got to be more much better received than, again, like you said before, a police officer coming in and trying to talk about the dangers or things of that. Yeah, that's obviously.
They'll listen to a former addict. I mean, those kids will, and their eyes get real big.
Mm-hmm. You know. They love that. They really do.
Now, if somebody were to come forward to your call in or speak to a volunteer or something out there in the field that says that I currently have a problem with a meth addiction, what do you do in those situations? Who do you refer them to?
We have a relationship with the Georgia Council on Substance Abuse, which is a great organization. They've been around a lot longer than we have, and they focus on everything from alcohol to you name it, you know, whatever substance out there. And so they have some hotlines, and they have a number of folks who can help with that area. We are not a treatment organization. We make right. that very clear.
Right.
We're a prevention organization. As Tom Siebel said, he said, you know, that treatment side is so hard and so difficult and so expensive. I'm not a guy who can figure that out. You know, I'm a marketing guy. I can figure out this other part.
Right.
And so that's what we're going to focus on, is on prevention. But, yes, have great relationships with those folks on the addiction side and the treatment side. Latrina's worked in some of those areas in the past as well. You know, so that we can put those people where they need to be.
And the other thing is that we have such an amazing website that there's a link on our website that basically says to get help. And it's so amazing because a person can go in, put in, there's a locator that pops up, it put in where they are, and they can put in how many miles they want, find something around them to get at, to access help, and it'll pull up that information for them. So, you know, this website we have is phenomenal, and that's just one way people can go on there and get that resource, because we don't focus on treatment, but we definitely want to be, you know, a support in any way that we can to people who are dealing with the issue.
That makes sense. It's good to have those connections. I'm sure that was one of the first things you worked on when you came to Georgia, was establishing those relationships.
Sure.
Now, you had mentioned some success ratios that you had out west where the organization was founded.
Right.
Have you had enough time here in Georgia to start to be able to evaluate that, how you're doing?
We've seen a little bit of that. Let me explain. We did our polling and did our very heavy research piece before we ran the first ad. We went out and did some pretty heavy polling, and we did that very scientifically. We hired the Roper Agency out of New York to do the work.
Okay.
They're the same group that did the polling in the other states, so it's a very rigid program of polling. Went into 42 school districts, 2,500 kids. I mean, great sample base, and we learned some things, and some of them are pretty scary. You know, we learned that 35% of young people in Georgia thought that there was little or no risk in trying this drug.
Oh my God!
Yeah, I mean that's bad.
A third,
more than a third,
right?
And 23% thought there was actually some benefit to trying the drug. oh, it'll help me study better, help me lose weight, help me when I'm bored. I mean, silly things that they, you know, some 14-year-old has heard from some 18-year-old. You know, just crazy, crazy things. And so those are the kinds of attitudes that we really are very interested in. Now, this is a big report, and that report is also on our website, you know, the results from that. Now, what we did was go back after a year, and we'll do this every year, and then poll again. Okay, how effective were we after that first year? We saw some significant changes in the very first year.
That's great.
In some of those attitudes. And a couple of things that what we saw at the end of the first year, you know, 90% of the kids said that if they had a brother or a sister or a friend who was thinking about trying meth, 90% of them would want them to see one of our ads, which was fabulous. You know, that's the kind of things
that is great.
We want to hear.
Are we now underneath a third, at least, of people that don't think it will harm them?
We are. That's moved down to 27%.
All right, good,
like
good.
That.
We're moving,
so
in, the right
moving in the right direction.
And
what you want to do is move that several percentage points every year until you've reached some, you know, very small number.
Right.
Now you've always got new kids coming into that population group. You know, into that 12 to 17 year old group, you got new ones coming into that group every year, so you got to keep the message going.
Right.
You
well, at least going. Now older brothers and sisters can now start to convey some of the right messages.
Absolutely.
As opposed to try this in your soda.
Absolutely.
Oh, unbelievable.
So you want the mentoring to go in the other direction.
Right. So let's say somebody's interested in becoming involved with the Meth Project, either from a financial standpoint, they'd like to help out, or they would like to volunteer, be them a former addict or otherwise. How would they go about doing that? What's the best way for them to proceed?
Well, they need to go to the website.
And what's the website address?
The website is Georgia, all spelled out, GeorgiaMethProject.org. Or they can just go methproject.org. Either way, they can get to us and find out what we're all about. The website, and Latrina touched on it a minute ago, and I want to talk about that website in
please
more
do.
Detail. Fabulous thing. I mean, the Siebel Foundation, again, you know, they were so creative 5 or 6 or 7 years ago with the ads that they came out with. Well, about a year and a half ago, they started saying, wait a minute, you know, we've done a great job with our TV and radio advertising, but what are we doing about social media? You know, what are we doing about peer-to-peer communications and social media? And so they really pressed their creative talent in the San Francisco area to help them in that area, the same group that had done so well with the ads. They still weren't getting what they wanted out of the creative talent. So they kept pushing and pushing. And finally they found a creative group, a new one in California that had been around for a while to help them figure this out. And one of the things that they found in some of the polling work is that 25 or 30% of the kids were also saying that after seeing one of the ads on TV or hearing an ad on the radio, they actually went to the website to try to find out more information. Now, we didn't ask them to do that as part of the advertising campaign. They were doing that on their own. So the Siebel Foundation went, wow, we need to take advantage of that. There's a real need there and a desire to learn more. So let's focus on that. So the Siebel Foundation went in there and came up with this new website. And when you go to the Georgia Meth Project or methproject.org, you'll see this. And the first thing you'll see is a big red, you know, sign that says ask. And it's what they've done is figured out the 26 questions that kids almost always ask about meth. Mm-hmm. You know, 99% of the questions are in that, are representative that people ask are in that group of 26 questions.
Right.
Once you go into there, oh my gosh, then you can branch off into 360 different pieces of content related to helping answer those questions. And it's everything from the videos, from the TV commercials,
games
that are there, radio pieces, artwork, things that kids have submitted, you know, all kinds of things, experts who come on and talk about the brain activity or other kinds of things about the drug. So the website is really important. Now, then the other piece, of course, that we're trying to get kids to do is then share this on our website. And Latrina, talk about our Facebook page a little bit.
Oh, yeah. So we try to get them to go from the website to the Facebook page. And what we try to do with Facebook, it's a challenge for us sometimes, but it's also a lot of fun, is that we try to get as many kids to the site as possible because you know, as you guys know, you do marketing and all of that. We try to go beyond just saying, go to our page.
Sure.
And so, you know, we try to find ways to give them a reason to get to our page. And so we've had some success with that. And so we've tried to, you know, give them, encourage them with games or encourage them to ask questions. You know, we try to link from our classroom presentation to saying, okay, now let's take this to the next step. And we want you guys to go on our Facebook page and, you know, we put pictures up and we'll try to lure them with bracelets and t-shirts to get them to go. And so far we've had success with that. Right now our Facebook numbers are a little over 10,000.
That's a big
and that's
number.
Been hard earned.
But that's of all the, there are 8 math project states out there, the total number of kids across all those states is about 30,000. So a third of all of that is coming from Georgia.
Oh, unbelievable.
So we've done it, and we've been at it less than shorter period of time than any of those other states. Mm-hmm. So we've done a great job. Latrina's done a great job. You know, finding spicy things to put on that Facebook page to get them to come in there. One of the other fun things that we've done you might want to talk about, too, is our teen TV thing that we're doing on YouTube. That's been a lot of fun.
We just started that. It was actually Jim's baby. And I always say he's dangerous with a whiteboard. So
right.
He came up with some stuff, and I'm like, wow, that's really good, Jim. So he basically...
I paid her to say
he basically just thought, you know, why don't we have, like, a YouTube show that our teens can run? Because you talked about the recovering addicts who are really big on trying to be a part of the campaign. Well, we really also want a lot of young people involved because they're the best advocates for us. They listen to each other. And so if we have more young people out there giving the message out, then that helps us. And so Jim thought, you know, kids are all over YouTube and they get drawn to some of the most, hate to say it, some of the craziest stuff that draws them, that they are lured by. And so Jim thought, why don't we use a couple of our volunteers and let them have a YouTube show, our teens. And yeah, we want them to have a central theme about meth and meth education, but we also want them to have their own personality. Let them talk about stuff that's interesting to them, where it's kind of like, it's their show, but we sponsor it. So they have a couple of things that they get in there. And so we've had we have our fourth show that posted yesterday, and it's two of our most dedicated young people. And they basically, you know, they cover hot topics and, you know, and their hot topics are whatever is going on in their little life. You know, they do a couple minutes on that, and then they'll transition into something meth-related. Like the first show, they talked about why they're part of the project, and, you know, they are just introducing themselves. The show that posted yesterday, Ellen, one of our 17-year-olds, she actually interviewed her aunt because Ellen got so involved in the project at 15. She was our youngest and our first teen to sign up 2 years ago. Because she lost her cousin to meth. Her cousin literally died on the side of the road. She dropped dead from meth addiction. And she shared that's why she got involved in the project. Well, yesterday she introduced her aunt, her cousin's mom, and she told her story about what the reality was of watching her daughter go through that and losing her daughter through that. So they go, you know, they go from serious and, you know, serious stuff, lighthearted stuff, or whatever. You know, and so they've been getting a following. I mean, we've just had them out for a few weeks now. And, you know, one of their first videos is already, you know, it's a little over 200 views now, which is, you know, kind of interesting that they just got started. So we have nothing to lose. They enjoy it.
Sure.
And they're having fun with it. So it's growing every week. So we post that on our YouTube channel and then we add the link to Facebook and we also put the link on Twitter. So they're starting to get really good feedback.
It's like iCarly with a mission.
Uh-huh.
That's right. Well, nationally, and just to give you some figures on how well we launched this new campaign in November. The new campaign meaning new ads, all the 8 meth project states around the country, all on the same page, all running the same ads, all with the new website and the Facebook look and all those things. Since that launched the first week of November, and this is just through the end of January, we don't have the February figures yet, but just through the middle or the end of January, over 30 million hits on YouTube.
30 million?
30 million hits on the new ads on the website and on Facebook and YouTube for the Meth Project. That's just phenomenal. That is beyond what anybody had hoped we would do.
Yeah, you have to be a cat playing a piano to do that.
that's right. But, you know, people are drawn to this stuff. And these are powerful ads. And the ads, but the new ads that are running, and again, we encourage you to go and look at them, These new ones were created by Darren Aronofsky, the guy who was the director of Black Swan.
Right.
And so you can see a little bit of that in some of the ads. I mean, they're pretty scary. They're pretty dark and scary in a way. Again, fact-based, you know, right out of the reality. It's where kids are saying, kind of narrating their own story as these terrible things are going on the screen, where they say, gee, if I'd only asked this or this or this about meth, if I'd only asked what it would do to my brain or what it would make me do these crazy things, you know, then my mom wouldn't be asking. And then the mom cuts in, oh my gosh, what have you done? And
yeah,
this girl's cutting her
wrist,
slitting her wrist or doing some other, I mean, it's horrible stuff. But it's a very effective campaign. And again, we encourage people to go on the site and check those ads out.
Sounds very interactive, the site. Sounds like there's a lot to learn and be able to play some games while learning.
Sorry.
Always helps, I think, in that process.
That's right. That's right.
Because every question, you know, that's on the ask wheel, it's provided the answer with six different answers to it. And those different answers are provided, like Jim said, with either a video, a game, or an ad or something like that. So it gets them really engaged, and especially young people, who is a primary target for that that website.
That's great. Anything else either of you would like to add?
We just encourage you to come out and volunteer and come and help us, you know, in one way or another. Be an advocate for us. Be out there talking about it. You know, a lot of people just don't know how dangerous this drug is. You know, those that do know really know. It's almost like a vampire culture, I call it, in some ways. People who know it and begin to understand it and begin to look for it, then all of a sudden you see it everywhere. Otherwise, it's easy for a lot of folks in their daily lives to be insulated, you know, from that culture.
Sure.
And to say, well, that's somebody else's problem. No, it affects all of us. And there are some communities out there, and I'm telling you, almost entire communities, if you can imagine that, that have a meth problem in those small communities. And that's a horrible thing to imagine, but we've actually seen that in some places.
Well, what your organization is doing is wonderful. I mean, it really, the adage about of an ounce of prevention, a pound of cure, I think this is more like an ounce of prevention, a ton of cure.
Mm-hmm.
When you consider the fact that such a small percentage of people that try to quit can't, you know, or a small percentage are able to do it versus how many cannot do it,
right.
It is so much better to catch this before it ever starts. You know, when you take a look at some of those statistics that you've already changed, I mean, this $1.3 billion number and how it affects Georgia, I mean, that the savings to the state and the taxpayers and everybody else and just the overall benefit to our communities is tremendous what you're doing. So thank you both very much for your involvement with this great cause and what you're doing every day, because you really are helping to make Georgia a better place for everyone.
Thanks for having us on.
You're so
great.
Welcome.
Thanks
Thank
so much.
You.
So this is Derek Van Dam signing off with Make a Difference Radio. To listen to this show later or to listen to previous recordings of Make a Difference Radio, please visit www.swipeforchange.com/blog.